This is the lecture for Biochem 421 for November 23, 2009.
All right, so this is November 23, and this is the end of chapter, what, 17? Is that it? All right, so metabolism. So that's crucial. That's the crucial thing. And there's a bunch of other stuff that because it's highly charged, it can actually bind to some metals and help reduce the toxicity of it. It can stimulate the immune system. Again, we talked about that. That's kind of, you're not really sure if that's the case or not. Although Linus Pauling thought it was best. The figure 1730, I am not going to worry about that. We can drop that. Next thing is biotin, chemistry on a tether. The biotin is a mobile carboxyl group carrier. All right. Typically, it's covalently bound to a lysine. The lysine biotin conjugate is called biocytin. The biocytin, you need to remember that. Biocytin is lysine biotin. And that biotin is carrying carboxyl groups. So there's a structure of it. You need to recognize the structure of this. So in general, could you write across the top or somewhere on this handout that you've got, link the name of the vitamin and or cofactor to its structure. Link the name of the vitamin to its structure. So you should be able to distinguish between amongst the vitamins we talk about. This is biotin. You should be able to distinguish it from ascorbic acid. If I give you a matching quiz or a matching part on the test coming up, part of it for these vitamin structures, it'll be that. It'll be matching. You won't have to regurgitate it, but you should be able to identify the different vitamins we talked about. There's biocytin right there. Wahoo. And notice, principal biotin-dependent carboxylations. Let's see here. You got, notice, these are all ADP-dependent, but they're also, notice what this is? Bicarbonate. And so you get this, you're adding, so the biotin binds to a carbonate or a carboxyl group. So it's a highly oxidized carbon carrier. Pyruvate to oxaloacetate. Does anybody tell me? Oh, by the way, there's a handout if you haven't gotten it. There's a handout, a couple of things. Anybody tell me what pathway that is? Pyruvate to oxaloacetate. You've memorized it. What is it? Okay, so right up there say gluconeogenesis. And the enzyme is pyruvate carboxylase. Do you remember pyruvate carboxylase as part of the gluconeogenic pathway? Is that the very, remember I had, it was a long pathway and there were simply four boxes and the bottom box was pyruvate carboxylase? Well, that pyruvate carboxylase is this thing. It takes bicarbonate and changes pyruvate to oxaloacetate. Pyruvate carboxylase, it's part of the gluconeogenic pathway. Acetyl-CoA to malonyl-CoA. This acetyl-CoA to malonyl-CoA. This is, I don't remember the name of the enzyme, but this is the fatty acid metabolism pathway. This is where you metabolize fatty acids, and you guys should tell me what that is. Propionyl-CoA to methylmalonyl-CoA. This is a pathway that deals with metabolism of three carbon groups that come from fatty acids. So this has the deal. This goes on to make succinyl-CoA. This methylmalonyl-CoA actually was a substrate for one of the enzymes that vitamin B12 is required for, oddly enough. But I do remember all the details of the top one. Let's go on. But suffice it to say that we're talking about adding a carboxylic acid or carbonic acid or carbonate to another compound that uses biotin. And let's go ahead. Must use bicarbonate and ATP. Whenever you see a carboxylation requires ATP and carbon dioxide or bicarbonate, think biotin. Okay, and the rest of this I don't care about. So circle the top thing. Circle the top thing. And let's not worry about the rest of it. Lipoic acid. Lipoic acid. Oh, my goodness. Lipoic acid. Outstanding. Hopefully we'll get to that first part of next week. And maybe not. But at any rate, it acts as an acyl carrier group. Now, lipoic acid. This is found, write this down, ladies and gentlemen. Lipoic acid is found in pyruvate dehydrogenase. Pyruvate dehydrogenase. Now, where is pyruvate dehydrogenase found? Remember that one? Pyruvate dehydrogenase. It takes pyruvate and changes it into acetyl-CoA. Pyruvate dehydrogenase. It's the it's the entrance enzyme into the citric acid cycle. Hopefully. At any rate, you can not worry about this, ladies and gentlemen. You can skip 1733 in terms of... there it is. Enzyme catalyzed by lipoic acid. Circle that one. Pyruvate dehydrogenase. That's the first enzyme of the citric acid cycle, et cetera. And we'll hopefully get... there's so much we're not going to get to. It's ridiculous. But at any rate... All right, so did you circle the top thing here and say citric acid cycle? Good, good. Next thing is folate, folic acid. Folates are donors of carbon 1 units for all oxidation levels of carbon except carbon dioxide. Okay? In other words, this is for biosynthesis. If you need a one carbon building block for biosynthesis, you get it from folic acid. That's the vitamin is folic acid. The active form it is called tetrahydrofolate, and notice it's abbreviated what? THF, which is also stands for what organic compound? Tetrahydrofuran, which is a very common diether solvent. No relationship whatsoever, by the way. The two THFs are completely different. All right, now THF is formed by two successive reductions of folate by dihydrofolate reductase, and etc. Now, here it is. Conversion to TF of THF, actually, conversion to THF. There's folate. There's, look at this, NAD pH. I bet we're going through some sort of what? Oxidation reduction reaction, also biosynthesis. Do you have this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And there's another THF. All right. And I'm gonna have to punt on this one. What I need for you to do here, you see each of these things like this on that particular diagram. Notice how they're reversible and they're making NAD. You're using NAD pH. You don't need to write this down. Don't write this down. What I do want you to write down is draw an arrow there and an arrow up there and write MTX. And write MTX here and then put an X across that arrow indicating that MTX blocks this particular enzyme that does this reduction. So, now what is MTX? Called methotrexate. Anybody know what methotrexate is? Anybody here had cancer? Anybody here knows of had somebody who has had cancer and had chemotherapy? There's an outside chance they might have had methotrexate. Methotrexate is a chemotherapeutic agent for cancer. It's an anti-cancer agent. Why would it attack that? Well, we'll get to that in just a little bit. So, methotrexate blocks the enzyme that changes folate into DHF and THF. As it turns out, once you have tetrahydrofolate, you see where those hydrogens... I want you to circle this spot right here. Just circle it, if you don't mind. Circle it and say, one carbon donor resides here. Circle this, where it's the 5-10 nitrogen, the 5-10 nitrogen, and say, one carbon donor resides here, or attaches here. Now, what happens is the following. Let's see here. And I didn't review this before I came down here. TTP stands for what? Anybody know what TTP stands for? This is thiamine triphosphate. Thiamine. And, okay, what's the base that's most closely related to thiamine? You get thiamine from just a one carbon difference. Is it uracil? I think it is. UTP. So, what this is saying here is the following. In order to convert UTP to TTP in mammals, you have to take a carbon donor and provide that carbon, because UTP and TTP is one carbon difference and TTP's got the extra carbon. Where it gets that carbon from is a carbonated form of THF. Okay? Now, what do we know about cancer cells? Are they rapidly dividing more rapidly than the surrounding area, or less rapidly dividing than normal cells? More rapidly. Therefore, do they need higher levels of TTP than normal tissue? Yes. All right, so let me say here. Increased demand within cancerous cells. So now you might get an idea of why methotrexate is an anti-cancer drug. Because you don't make folate. You have to eat folate. You have to get it. It's a required nutrient. It's a vitamin, all right? And therefore, you can't synthesize it. Once you get it, however, it still is not in its correct form. It has to go through these processes of ultimately THF. So methotrexate will block the formation of THF. If THF is blocked, if there's not enough THF, what happens here? This gets blocked. And what happens then? This gets blocked to some degree. And what happens to the growth of cancer? Slowed, perhaps even stopped, depending on the type of cancer. Right? So that's why methotrexate is an anti-cancer drug. Should I go through that again? Okay. Methotrexate blocks the formation of THF from folate. A carbon-added form of THF is required for the formation of TTP from UTP. When the methotrexate blocks the formation of THF, the formation of TTP is reduced from UMP, slowing or killing the cancer cell. Now, does this process occur in normal cells? Yes. Okay, it does. So, what are you doing? Basically, we are in a very, and hopefully we'll change that in the next 20 years, we're just in a very brute force anti-cancer mode. When you're taking chemotherapy, it's not targeted. It simply targets rapidly dividing cells. Those rapidly dividing cells could be normal cells. Can you name a normal set of cells that's rapidly dividing? What is it? Your hair cells. Okay, so what does methotrexate do? Kills them too. And then what happens to your hair? Falls out because it's rapidly dividing. What else is rapidly dividing? Your cheek cells. constantly sloughing off cheeks. Matter of fact, they figure about 30% of the nitrogen you get in your diet comes from you. Cells that have sloughed off and you digest. Be your guest, be your guest, eat yourself and... Never mind. Any rate, gruesome but true. So, guess what happens when you're taking chemotherapy? The cells in your mouth dry up. And invariably, people with certain types of chemotherapy have dry mouth. And with that dry mouth, they reduce the protection that your saliva gives to your teeth, and they end up, their amount of cavities rocket dramatically. Some people on chemotherapy have rotted teeth from all that. You start bleeding internally because your digestive tract, your intestine, the small intestine and so on, has rapidly dividing cells. So it's a very brutal method of survival. What they do is they bring you right up to the point of death and then bring you back. And then they bring you right up to the point of death and then bring you back. And they bring you right up to the point of death and bring you back. And that's just the first round. Many times there are three rounds. Why is that? Because if you have a tumor, no more than one third of that tumor cell is rapidly dividing at any given time. And that's what the anti-cancer agent gets, because it attacks rapidly dividing cells. So it knocks out that one third, but guess what's happened? Guess what's left? Well, two thirds. And in a few weeks, those two thirds then become rapidly dividing. You have to attack them again. Okay, and it shrinks them. And then what happens? Okay, you don't kill the cells that are rapidly dividing. They begin to rapidly divide. You kill them. And so you bring people right up to the point of death and back several times. And many times that works well. Some aggressive cancers, however, another year or two, they're back. And there are people who of a certain age say it's just not worth it. And they just they decide not to take the chemotherapy because it's so horrible. Okay? Let me assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that if you guys ever get cancer before the age of 90, I expect you to fight it with every inch of your life. Every inch of your being. Fight it. Fight it. Fight it. Fight it. Here is what the essence of the oxidation states of THF. Now then, in order to be a one carbon carrier donor, you must be able to find a source for that one carbon unit. Now, what do you have to know out of this? This is what you have to know eventually. First of all, you need to know that serine and glycine are the sources for the one carbon units that THF ultimately donates. Serine and glycine are the one carbon units for the donor carbons of THF. Once those one carbon unit is donated, typically, the first thing you make is N5-N10-methylene-THF. Now, why do they call it N5-N10-methylene? Right there, because the number 5 carbon and the number 10 carbon are the one that holds that carbon. But that carbon can be then oxidized by a variety of enzymes to either become more reduced, called N5-methyl, or more oxidized. And so you end up being a one carbon carrier with a variety of oxidation states. That's the bottom line. THF provides one carbon donor atoms of a variety of oxidation states. THF provides one carbon donor atoms in a variety of oxidation states. That's what THF does. I'm not going to make you memorize it, but I do expect you to be able to, when you leave here, have some idea of why they call it N5N10 or N-formal or formalyl. Notice how oxidized this can get. You're only one carbon away, you know, a couple bonds away from being completely oxidized. There's actually another way of getting this stuff. I said the serine and glycine. You can also get it from histidine. And you can get it from bicarbonate as well. That's a typo. It says HCO2. That's not correct. It's HCO3. But anyway, the key here is these two up here are the most important. And notice this is a reverse of the glycine synthase. Now, so what? So what? Well, there turns out that there's another one-carbon donor molecule that's very, very important in metabolism, and that's called SAM. SAMIM. And that's right here. It's called S-adenosylmethionine. I need for you to be able to tell me what SAM stands for. S-adenosylmethionine. Again, this is a highly water-soluble material. You can buy this particular group, this particular thing here, SAM, at health food stores. They don't call it SAM. They call it S-A-M-E. SAM-E. I don't know why, but I guess they call it that. The SAM is a methyl donor. It only provides one oxidation state, and then oxidation state is of the methyl group. So you got a biosynthetic methylation, and you have a methyl acceptor and a methylated acceptor, and you then go down to make the S-adenosyl homocysteine, Oh, look at this. Homocysteine to methionine. I wonder where they get the carbon for the methionine from. Where do they get the carbon for the methionine from homocysteine? What's that called? Somebody just shout it out. Name it. N5 what? Methyl what? THF. Thank you very much. Yes. And then the THF goes. So where does the THF get that carbon from? Primarily. Was it? Yeah. Serine or glycine. Now then, that homocysteine has a couple other fates. You can go to cystathionone, alpha-ketoglutarate, propanil-CoA, succinyl-CoA, etc., etc. But this is the route here. I am not going to ask you to memorize the structures here, but you need to know the component of what the purpose of SAM. What is the purpose of SAM? It's to donate what? Methyl groups. Can it donate any other oxidation state besides methyl? Say no. No. What one carbon donor can provide multiple oxidation states for carbon? THF. Thank you very much. All right. Well, I'm going to go on 5 more minutes and then we'll start the quiz. Dink. Now, right, you should have a handout that's got glycolysis. Go see Ken. Ken's got the copies of this. It's now up on, it's also on D2L, but that just happened to this morning, so apologize for that. And let's see here. What are the essential features of glycolysis, ladies and gentlemen? Well, you've studied this before. We're just going to hit the highlights. We're going to primarily focus on the regulation. All right. So the fancy term for glycolysis is the Emden-Meyerhoff-Warburg pathway. Emden-Meyerhoff pathway. Essentially, all cells carry out glycolysis. This is absolutely true of eukaryotes. There's a few prokaryotes that they've found in extreme conditions that don't use glycolysis, but even then, they may use fragments of it for other things. 10 reactions, same in all cells. Rates vary, 2 phases. First phase converts glucose to two glycerol-3-phosphates. Second phase produces 2 pyruvates. All right. Before we get to that point, let's review where we're talking about here. We got glucose. Glucose gets converted into what? Glucose 6-phosphate. Now, glucose-6-phosphate turns out to be the central metabolite in carbohydrate metabolism. What's one of the fates for glucose-6-phosphate? Right, someone shouted out, but that's correct. Someone said glycogen. Okay, so glucose-6-phosphate, so what are the fates? Pentose phosphate pathway. This is a one-way arrow. Glycogen is a two-way arrow. This is a two-way arrow. Pentose phosphate pathway. What do you get out of this? And also, what do you get out? What are the riboses used for? Glycogen goes to glucose 6. All right, so then what happens here? You end up, this is, you have glycolysis, glycolysis. What's the end of glycolysis? The end of glycolysis is pyruvate. What's the reverse of glycolysis? Can you read my handwriting? Thank you very much. That's exactly right. This is, of course, hexokinase, glucokinase. There's two of them there. This is glucose-6-phosphatase. I'm scrawling because we're going to learn about the fates of pyruvate in a little bit. So we're going to focus on glucose, but the central metabolite in carbohydrate metabolism is glucose-6-phosphate. All right. Pyruvate, ATP, and NADH. What's the where does the NADH go in glycolysis? Where does it go? Does it go to make biosynthesis? Does it go to make things? What is it? Electron transport chain. The NADH is used for energy. So is the ATP. And the three fates of pyruvate are going to be fairly straightforward. We'll see that in a little bit. Approximately 5% of the energy of glucose is released in glycolysis. That's right. The rest of it's released. Rest of the carbon energy is released through citric acid cycle. All right. Well, we got to quit, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start here on Tuesday.